Hi, my name is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bondosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And this is a grammar episode. We're going to talk about why we capitalize I and other weird rules and why you can't use bold typeface. So, here it goes. All right. So, this week in critiques. So, I was reading The Bourne Identity. And in it, I read this line. He slid the gun into the elasticized fabric of his sock. I'm like, all socks have elastic. Like, that's just a really wordy way. Like, you could just say he slid it in his sock. Like, it's just wasted words, you know? I mean, you have to tell someone the sock does not have elastic because they're going to assume that it does. Like, that's how socks are made. So, I just felt like it was just kind
of... Okay, I'm going to push back just a little. So, for some reason, reading that word makes me think of the stretching. So I'm not just thinking of a sock. I'm thinking of a stretching sock, which is like subtly different.
I don't think it's different at all. I feel like he just was like needlessly purple.
Yeah, no, when you read that, it was a mouthful for you to read.
Yeah.
So I agree that it's kind of verbose.
Yeah, I just
thought. But I don't know, something about the image. I don't know.
So, all right. And then did you have critiques of writing true?
It's halfway between.
Okay, why don't you go now, and then I'll go into just writing.
Okay, okay. So, I read a book called Ringworld. I've been reading a bunch of sci-fi. And I just want to pull out a couple of things that I thought about as I encountered this book. So, one is, they use the curse word tange.
Huh?
The characters say tange. And, Brandon Sanderson loves this technique of like making up a swear word.
I love it.
It actually really bugs me. We've talked about this before. The ironic thing is I found myself thinking the word tange as like a personal curse after that.
Funny.
So like it worked on me, but it just bugs me a little. The reason why it bugs me is like if you think about another culture, say the British culture versus our American culture, like they'll say bloody as a curse word, right? But bloody is still a word in English, right? Mm. It's just used as a curse. And I feel like whatever language they speak on Ringworld and it was translated into English, why did they not translate that one word but all the rest of them, right? I feel like... He never explains what that word means, but if it means bloody, then why not translate it to bloody?
Right.
Or if... anyway.
Well, but see, this is where I argue for Sanderson, because his are still normal ones. Like, Mistborn, they say, by the Lord
that's
ruler,
true.
And he
true.
Is their god, which, you know...
Yeah.
You
can, which that fits.
Fits. And
yeah,
then, you know,
true.
As their deities change, right, they say, rust and ruin, because those are their deities.
Yeah.
And so they curse based on... Right, because if I remember correctly, profanity derives from three things. Religion... Sex and excrement. Those are where all profanity is derived from. And so when, you know, a lot of these in worlds will still derive their profanity from these three things. So, because I've been reading the Ink Mage series, and he uses standard swears that we do. And I hate it. I feel like that doesn't belong in your world.
Really?
Like, that doesn't belong there. You don't have our history, right? For the evolution of your swear words.
I don't know why.
But I mean, imagine you're reading some fantasy and the guy looks at the guy's angry and says, Jesus Christ. It's like, no, that does not work.
No, that's true.
That's not, yeah.
Well, maybe it's just that I feel like the deity swear words are not as central and the like
profanity
excrement.
And sexual. Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, okay, let me talk about just a couple other quick things. This book, I told you that it was sci-fi, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, like if you've read Douglas Adams, like that's comical. It's primarily comedy. It just happens to be set in a sci-fi situation, right? Ringworld was not comedy, but it was a little bit comical. And that threw me off. Like, it's not nearly as funny as Douglas Adams, but it's still, it has this quirky stuff throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt a little unsettled by the genre. And I know we've talked about this a lot, but you need to somehow set up an expectation of genre. And I guess The problem is Larry Niven is in this weird middle ground, so it's hard for him to do that. Mm. But it just, it took me like half the book, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be laughing at this stuff. This is weird. Seriously, like halfway that's, through, and then I kind of like settled in. I'm like, oh yeah, I like it now. But it took a while.
That's funny.
Okay, and then the last thing, we talked about titles matching, or I have, because that's like a gripe of mine.
Right.
And I just wanted to point out, so his first novel is called Ringworld, and then his second one is Ringworld Engineers, and the third one, Ringworld Throne. So you have that word Ringworld, uh-huh. and then he just tacks on these other two words. I mean, it's not a perfect set, but I kind of like the way they fit together. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So
in writing True, I came across this while I was reading Tim's book, and we've talked about his book before, and we did an interview with him.
Tim Niederreiter?
Yeah, Tim Niederreiter. It's a tough name. Yeah. So I came across this line. He says, "There was no ice on the canal yet, but even with my heavy coat and the stubborn fat around my gut, I felt a bit of a chill from the approaching winter." And it just felt like there was just so much in that line. Like when he says, "Stubborn fat around my gut," it tells us only that the character is weight, but also that he's unhappy about his weight.
Yeah.
And that he has worked to get rid of it and failed at some point. Like, there's just so much in that little line about the character. I just thought it was beautiful. And then, of course, we have the chill of approaching winter. So he doesn't give us a date. Or even label, we get the feel of the approximate season. So even if he's on the South Pole, or I guess the Southern Hemisphere, where things are different, you know, so November would be, you know, warm for them, cold for us. But here, it doesn't matter, because he hasn't given us the month or the date. What he's giving us is the feel of the season.
Yeah.
So I just felt like there was so much in that line that was just done well, and it really worked.
I like that.
So, yeah. All right. So the discussion today, as I said before, this is a grammar episode. So this came out of a couple things, but my brother has his own film company, and he does a lot of his own marketing. So he'll send me materials to edit for him. And when this first exchange first started happening, all kinds of weird stuff would be capitalized. Sometimes the whole word, it was like chaos. It was grammar chaos is what it was. And I'd be like, why is this capitalized? Why is this bold? Why is this whole word capitalized? He's like, emphasis, all for emphasis, emphasis.
So did you change his?
No, eventually I gave up. I was like, it's just totally different. But here's the thing, right? Long before there were really hard rules on grammar, that's kind of why they capitalized anything. Like, I want to emphasize this word, I'm going to capitalize it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's kind of where a lot of this comes from. And we'll dig into it a little deeper in a little bit. But I do want to talk about I specifically. Why is that capitalized? Because if you look like he, she, we, me, all lowercase. Right? They, them, lowercase. Everything. All of those pronouns are lowercase.
That's weird.
Except I. And here's the reason. Originally, it was each. I-C-H-E. And,
each.
Yeah. And eventually this was shortened to just the lowercase I. So, and then it was pronounced E, and, would eventually later evolve into I. But yeah, and so it gets crunched down to just the letter I, pronounced E.
Well, so do you happen to know whether that was a written shift or a spoken shift?
I imagine it was spoken first and then became written, but we have no way of knowing that. We do see the changing in the writing. That's where we see it changed. And shorthand was used a ton, you know, particularly in early writing. They're always trying to find ways to condense it because it's, you know, like it was tough and expensive. And so the shorthand I, the lowercase I, was used for in, and it was also used for if. And so whenever you were referring to I, they'd make it a little longer. And eventually that just becomes the capital letter I.
Man, speaking of abbreviating, I love in Peter Pan that Hook abbreviates his name James. He writes J-A-S period Hook, which I just think is so funny. Saving two letters, man. Like, I'm just going to shorten James. Anyway, I just think it's cool. It's like it's got some panache to it.
Abbreviated James to J-A-S Hook. That's funny. But yeah, and so that's why I is capitalized as
that's
opposed
so
to
interesting.
All the other pronouns that we have there. So capitalization itself is weird. So like some of the weird rules are like you capitalize president. Like if you say President Trump, you capitalize the P in president. But if you mention the name first, so if you say Mr. Trump, the president, that's not capitalized because the title came after it. Just weird random rules. So we're going to kind of look at how these weird random rules come out. So about the 17th century, all sentences are beginning with capital letters. But essentially, there is a kind of cultural emphasis that's being determined on what words we capitalize. So if we look at the Constitution of the United States, it's written in this time period. And so it says, we the people, capitalized people of the United States, which standard we would still capitalize now, right? It's that proper name of a country. In order, which is capitalized, to form a more perfect union, capitalized, establish justice, capitalized. That was a trend then. You'd capitalize virtues, right? But you, not all of these are virtues. Union and people are also capitalized. Ensure domestic tranquility, capitalized. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare, capitalized. And secure the blessings of liberty, which are capitalized blessings and liberty, to ourselves and our posterity, capitalized. To ordain and establish this Constitution, capitalized, of the United States of America. It's just madness in there. Like, some of these words, you're like, why did you pick that one and not, you know, this other one?
Okay, so this is me breaking this down, but the people, our posterity, welfare, so these are nouns. They're capitalizing all the nouns. The one that I don't get is in order to form. Now, order can be a noun, but this is not a noun. In order to. That seems so odd.
So odd. Yeah, yeah. So you have the virtues capitalized, but there's another, a lot of the words are just personal preference, right?
Oh, yeah. So by the way, I pointed out those nouns, but common defense, that, if yeah. you're following that, would be capitalized, yeah, but it's not. So for some reason, that was demoted.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens is...
Oh, sorry. One more.
Yeah.
To ourselves and our posterity. Ours, like, this is a couplet. Ourselves is not capitalized, and posterity is, like, in deference to the future, I guess? Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so what happens is, essentially, it starts to feel like madness because people are hand-picking what they're going to claim as a virtue and not. And so, to eliminate this madness, they start going through and writing rules to decapitalize, but these rules are being written by different people who don't necessarily agree on them, which is how we end up with a case where you would say President Trump capitalized, Trump president not capitalized. Because there was this massive wave of trying to remove all of these capitalizations, but a disagreement on which to remove. And so we ended up with some of these odd pairings in English of how it should and shouldn't be.
So, by the way I think of that is, it's just like you add a word to his name. So President Trump or President Donald J. Trump?
It sounds right. Name.
I don't even know. That guy. So you capitalize that in that case because it's like you're expanding his name and saying president. Whereas after, he's the president. Incidentally, we're like naming a noun at that phase.
Yes, but if we refer to the president without a reference, capitalize again.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. The president. Wow. Well, that one confuses me.
Like I said, it evolved out of this period of madness, right? Because there was just far too much pick and choose and not really any rules. So then as they wrote in the rules, some things got overlooked and some things were addressed by some grammarians and not others, and then, you know, just based on popularity, some got moved forward and others. And so what we ended up is with things like this president issue has some really random capitalizations to it because it was not something that was widely adopted as they were pulling all these capitals out.
So when you're talking about people writing the rules, are you talking about like Merriam-Webster?
Like no.
He's putting a dictionary together and the rules are coming about because of that?
No, there are other grammarians. I'd have to look up the names of these writers. But yeah, so you have that then happening in the 18th and 19th century. And then by the 19th century, you know, education is socialized and widespread. And now the rules are much harder to change. where are we going next? So here's the interesting thing, right? So if you pick up a copy of Frankenstein, it is written in the time of the madness of capitals, right?
Oh, really?
But if you pick up a copy today, it's all standardized, right? But the interesting thing is that Frankenstein is written as a series of letters. So my thought as a writer is you want to maintain the madness of capitals.
Yeah.
Because these are supposedly letters written at that time.
Right.
And so I think if you're writing historical fiction and you have some kind of written text by the characters, you would want to have the madness of capitals. And maybe you would even want to lamp it to point it out, and you have a child say, why do you capitalize it like that? And the parent says, because it's a virtue. Right? And so then the audience is like, oh, there's other stuff going on here. That's why I've got all kind of crazy capitals going on.
Dude, so also, like, we have a modern day example of the rules being formed. Like, you'll see a lot of people write the word email as capital E dash mail. You'll see other people write it as lowercase e dash mail. And then I like to write it E-M-A-I-L.
Yeah, that's how I write it.
And I think that's probably the leading of those three. I haven't looked it up. Yeah. But it's slowly shifting. And it's cool. So we're making these rules even today. But
Yeah. Honestly, some of my feelings on madness of capitals that has lingered after all of English came into a mashing halt, is we should revolt on someone and intentionally refuse to do the ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if president is capitalized most of the time, we should just capitalize it all the time. Like, why finick with these weird exceptions?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my thought on that. Okay, so now we'll talk about emphasis. And this is, again, kind of comes back to my brother. He throws in his bolds wherever he wants to create emphasis. Well, here's the interesting thing. In every form of writing except the novel, bold is an accepted form of emphasis. Not only accepted, it is the standard of emphasis. You bold it. Right? Even nonfiction, right? They'll have bullet points, they'll have bold. Even nonfiction uses bold typeface. But for some reason, you can't in novels.
Yeah, that is never weird. Accepted.
And so the way it's done in a novel is italics. But here's the problem with the italic. We also use italics for titles. We also use italics for verbatim thought.
I use it for whispering.
Whispering. But I feel like and I have to appeal to the indie writing community to this. Use bold for emphasis and stop italicizing. If you're going traditional publishing, they're going to force you because somebody's forcing them.
Wait, so you're doing this in your novel?
I never emphasize with italics. I feel like if I have to use italics or bold for emphasis, then I've failed in the narrative.
So you're telling our readers, if you use bold, you failed. But you should use it.
So that's my own take. But I've seen people do it, and I feel like the italic is overused, and we're not using one of the tools available to us. Hmm. You know?
That's so interesting. To be honest, I agree with your reasoning, but I don't think I'm going to start bolding. Like, it just seems weird. And I have a nonfiction book in which I have used bold.
See? Nonfiction.
I don't know. I have locked into tradition.
Locked in. So I am very anti-italics for emphasis because it's used for other things and it's confusing. And in every other form of writing that we do, we have an accepted form, a preferred form, right? Hmm. Novels are broken. Revolt. Bold. I mentioned verbatim thought here. So I thought I'd talk about very briefly verbatim thought versus interiority. But looking at the how long this episode's gone, I think I'm planning a whole episode on it, and so I'm just going to save it till then to kind of clarify what's the difference between the two and when would you use those italics. Mm. Okay, so as always, we'd love if you'd leave us a review on whatever platform you listen to. Tell your writer friends about us. Link to some of your favorite episodes in a blog or whatever. That'd be great. Help us out. If you enjoy the show, check out one of our books. The keywords are up. So they will be updated by Saturday, and so you can check back. But I will not send out a new email with each update, and not every genre might get an update each week. With just whatever we've gathered that week, we'll put up the new stuff that Saturday. Or they may be there before, but by Saturday they will be there. So you can wait till then, or if you're really eager, you could check on Wednesday and they might be there. No guarantees. But yeah, so we'll keep feeding you those new ones. We've pulled the password as we're really trying to promote this, but starting in April, all April keywords will be password locked, so only accessible to those who get that through the email.
Cool. Guys, so we say the things we just said every week, but I'm talking to you. I want you to go leave us a review on the podcast. It would be awesome if you did us that huge favor. Thanks. It's time to start writing.